the lids off the cookie jar.
Hello again, and thanks for joining me. I'm your host, Christine Bruce, broadcasting on Wet'suwet'en territory through CICK 93.9 FM in Smithers, BC. This week, part two of Bats Are the Bomb. Carly Quinn, BC Bat Project Coordinator in the Skeena region, on behalf of BC Bats, is going to join me again today for more bat trivia, because bats are the bomb. Watching the documentary The Biggest Little Farm reminded me that diversity is key, and that every life form has a contribution to make. With the notion of diversity in mind, I have a wide range of topics to share with you this winter, but I want to start with bats. As you've probably guessed, one of my goals here is to demonstrate the value of many life forms whose reputation has been besmirched. We need to get back to a place where all life is respected, even in the moments of disharmony and fear, and what looks like failure. Bats keep our insect populations in check. They're not the scary creatures that some of us associate with the spooky side of Halloween. They're gentle and sweet. That's one of the reasons I got training last year as a bat ambassador. And Carly Quinn, our Skeena Region Bat Count Coordinator on behalf of BC Bats, is going to help me convince you of how great they are. Carly, why are we so afraid as a species of bats? They're small, they're innocuous, they pay very little attention to us. They're basically just trying to get by. What is it about bats that they have such a bad reputation?
Yeah, I think you said it earlier. I think Hollywood and, you know, our media, it's like Halloween every year.
With the cats.
Yeah.
We make cats look so scary and we make bats look scary. You're
exactly.
Right.
Yeah, we're villainizing them and they do nothing but wonders for us. I think, you know, the term flying rat bounce around people, you know, like, rats did cause a lot of like health issues for humans. So I think people just assume any small furry thing that, you know, and like they're not the cutest is the problem. I find them so terribly cute.
Yeah.
But lots of people don't find their little scrunched up foldy faces that cute. So unfortunately, yeah, they get this bad rap and like people think they're going to bite them because of all those movies. Or it's like, I literally watched Batman Begins recently and it shows Batman's origin story because he falls into this well and then bats surround him and like, it shows them like literally attacking him. He's on the ground and he's being bit by bats. And I'm like, never happened. You know, like that's not what happens ever. And so it's such a weird thing because people watch that and like, ooh, then he became Batman to overcome his crazy fear of bats. And that tells everybody that it's valid to fear bats and that you should fear Batman.
How did Hollywood become the expert?
I know, exactly. And the biologists over here going, no, please stop. Like, and there's lots of other species. Like, yeah, like cats, you said, lots of things that Hollywood, like spiders. I love spiders.
Yeah, spiders are so important.
Exactly. And like besides your fear, one of you actually had a traumatic experience with a spider. They want to stay away from you as much as you want to stay away from them.
And like, if I was on this planet and something was that much bigger than me,
yeah, it's laughable that we're like, ee!
Yeah.
And you're this little thing looking up going, you're afraid of me? You're huge. Yeah, it's silly. But yeah, like, our media is really, really efficient at convincing us stuff that we don't even know we're being convinced of.
Yeah, so like marketing.
Exactly.
I have to tell you that marketing departments have always been my least favorite because they lie through their teeth just to sell you
something.
They
know how to manipulate you. And that's, but I don't understand when Hollywood benefits from villainizing bats. Like, no one wins in that scenario because then we're just unnecessarily scared of something. And it now affects their conservation because people are less likely to care about them and they need our help and they've never done anything bad to us for the most part. A lot of people think like diseases have come from bats and like there is some like, but that's
true of everything though.
Exactly.
I mean, people spread diseases
and it's
too.
People being in bat space, not bats being in people's space.
Which is always
right?
The case, right?
Exactly.
The chicken flu.
Exactly.
Was our
fault.
We're
putting them in our space.
Yeah.
Like we're walking there and going, oh no, this happened to me. And it's like, there's ways to manage it. And at the end of the day, they're not doing anything on purpose. That's for sure.
Yeah.
We know that they're not trying to give us diseases. And that's not our bats. Our bats are trying to keep to themselves and eat insects, period. They just want to sleep and eat and then go hibernate.
Have babies.
Yeah, exactly. Little babies.
Yeah.
Yeah, bats are, speaking of babies, like, do you know what bat babies are called?
Pups?
Yes, they're called pups. I got my husband the other day because he was like, kids? And I was like, you would think kids. But yeah, they're called pups. Lots of people don't know that, which I think it makes them even cuter because they are little pups. And like as mammals, lots of mammals like cats and dogs all have big litters. They all have several offspring per year to help their population growth, right? That's how lots of bunnies, lots of mammals have multiple offspring to ensure their survival. Because flying takes up so much energy, bats can really only afford to have one pup. So they have one pup per season, and all of their energy goes into that. And so females have way more energy expenditure because they're mammals. They are breastfeeding their pups. And so creating milk and surviving every cold night and keeping their little pup alive.
And flying to get food.
And flying to get food is huge energy. And they're tiny. They're so very small that they just have to keep eating to maintain life. So they're just so fragile in that way. If they have one bad summer or a couple bad nights, that's all it takes for a pup to die. And then that's whole world that year. And so, yeah, they're not equipped to face habitat change and disease and all that, right? They are putting their eggs in one basket every year. And if it doesn't work out, it's a huge hit on the population, where other animal species are a lot more resilient to things like disease and habitat loss because they at least have numbers in the back pocket. Right. So, like, you know, one out of two offspring survives and at least they've replaced themselves. But yeah, one is not enough for a good sustainable population in the face of all the challenges they face. Yeah.
Something that we haven't clarified, I think you can take it as an assumption, but I bet there are a lot of people out there who haven't gone this direction yet. When we talk about a bat count, we're going to a roost that's all maternity ward. Like, there's no male bats in these roosts. The males live somewhere else because the females are all roosting and bringing up pups.
Yeah, we call it a maternity roost because it is predominantly females. There are some freeloader male bats who are just, yeah, they're benefiting from the heat of the roost and, like, because they want to save energy too, so you will get males in there, but they're freeloaders. They don't need to be there is the point. But yeah, these roosts that we're going to are called maternity roosts. So the females roost together for the sake of, saving energy. Because if they're doing it together, they stay warmer. Where males, because all they're doing is flying and eating and they're not raising any pups.
And they're not bringing food back.
Exactly. They're not helping.
Hosers.
In any way, exactly. they can roost up. There's lots of single roosting male bats. And like, you know, like there will be males mixed in there, especially during the pupping season when a lot of the pups are male. But yeah, no, like hibernation sites, all the bats will roost together. But yeah, during the summer months, they mostly divide and the females stick together to stay warm and help each other's babies stay warm.
There's something kind of magical about that.
Mm-hmm. You know? I like it a lot. Who needs them?
Well, we do need them.
I'm joking.
But don't be a freeloader. Don't be a hoser.
Yeah.
There was, I think, four places we visited this summer. The second place we visited for a bat count was just outside Smithers, and they have a single bat house on the side of their home. Mm-hmm. And we counted 11 bats there, which is a small number, but still 11 bats. Woohoo! How do you argue with that, right? The big news at this location was that there was chicken wire under the bat house. What was that about?
Yeah, so this particular property had I think they're both biologists.
Yeah. They were just really clever about this, right? You look at it and you think, what's that? Yeah, and then you realize.
Yeah, exactly. They're super clever. So they know that there's cats around. I think they have a cat, and they're trying to deter their own cat from catching any bats that might fall or from, trying to jump up and catch the bats. So they had a nice little guard You know, it's still a decent distance away from the bat house, so the bats could get out and in, okay, but also so that it would stop a cat jumping up and swiping a bat, which is huge because lots of, like, the Round Lake House, those cats were like, oh, we're just going to hang out where we see the bat. So the cats are clever, and they know where they come
from. Free meal.
And they'll, exactly, they'll hang out.
It's going to fall out of the sky. Yeah, exactly. Manna from heaven.
Exactly. Come over here. The food just falling out of the sky. exactly. So it was really clever of them to put in their own kind of cat deterrent system.
Yeah.
And we love to see that because, unfortunately, cats are one of the number one issues facing bats and other small rodents and birds. Because, domestic cats are really efficient at killing.
Yeah.
If you didn't know. Having anything to deter them from the bat house is huge. And having the bat house just, like, really high in general can help with that. But sometimes they like to be low. So, and theirs was nice and low, and they said they get lots of bat use at that place. It was a low count this year, but they're also using their siding on the side of the house. So, yeah, maybe next year we'll get more there. It was just a weird year. Low insects.
It was
that.
A weird year.
Yeah. Everyone was like, woohoo, no mosquitoes, eh? Like, we went hiking and there wasn't any bugs. And I was like, every time someone said that, I was like, yay. But in my heart, I was like, oh my God, the poor bats.
Yeah.
And everything else that eats insects. There's lots of things that eat insects. So, yeah, weird, very weird year this year.
Yeah, this is a disturbing year. As a child, I remember driving to holidays and my father could hardly keep up with the bugs that were hitting on the windshield. Well, I don't have these problems anymore. Yeah. You know? Used to be a lot of insects. I mean, I could bring all sorts of insects home and say, look, a praying mantis. Look, a couple of dragonflies and a damselfly. Yeah. You know, I mean, that was how I became an armchair quarterback when I was a kid. You know, like, look at all these walking sticks. And now you never see that stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
People wonder what the hell I'm talking
about. Walking sticks.
I haven't seen one of those in so long.
Oh, praying mantis. You know, I was talking about, because you're from Ontario as well. I was talking to someone about fireflies. Like,
we never see them out here.
So many fireflies. Oh. And now you never see them. Yeah. But even Ontario, like in my normal, like my cottage where I grew up, like you go there now and I'm like, I used to collect fireflies for the night, put them in a jar, and I was stoked about it. I left them out the next day. It was great. Loved fireflies. But yeah, they are not doing well because of wetlands. They really need wetlands. Right. And I think a lot of our fireflies are coming from the States too, right? There's a bit of a life cycle happening there. And if the States aren't looking after their insects, and it's, you know, it all happens. So it's all a chain reaction. But sorry, I keep taking the conversation to negative.
You know what? There's so many great places, though, that we need to take the conversation, right?
Exactly.
You want to see a firefly? Protect a wetland.
Exactly. Yeah. Kids these days don't know the magic of fireflies. Like, oh, man.
Yeah, there's so much whimsy that we're missing out on.
Yeah, exactly.
No, you're totally right about that.
I'm sure bats used to eat fireflies.
I'm sure they did.
Pretty easy to spot.
Yeah. How simple is that, right? Even if you're still not convinced about bats, I hope this next bit of trivia will still alarm you. Are bats on the threatened species list?
Yes. We have over half of our bats in BC are on the threatened list, or on a list of some kind, either the blue list, the yellow list, there's the BC list, and there's also the federal list. So I think we have two federally listed, or maybe three federally listed species, and then the rest are provincially listed. With habitat decline, they are dropping off the planet pretty quickly. And then when you add things like white nose syndrome, that's really where we're getting in trouble. In the East, white nose syndrome has just absolutely devastated bat populations in the East. And it's slowly moving westward. And we've had our first case of it this year. In Grand Forks this year in, I think, June, maybe in May, we had our first white nose syndrome. I think 3 or 5 years before that, we had a case in Washington. That was the closest one we had. But now we have one in Grand Forks. So it's coming. White nose syndrome is a fungal disease. It grows a fungus on the nose of roosting bats, of wintering bats. So in the hibernation sites, while they're sleeping, this fungus grows on their nose and it disturbs their system enough that they end up waking up and they come out of hibernation and they end up dying.
Oh, God.
And it affects their ability to echolocate, ability to do anything. So it's devastating our populations right now. So white nose syndrome surveillance is one of our top priorities in the North here, or in BC in general, is if you're finding bats anytime between November and May, we need to know about it. Yeah. Because if they're coming at a hibernation, we need that bat to be tested for white nose syndrome so that we can get ahead of it, and try and make sure that we're one step ahead of this thing, because it'll come like wildfire, like all these diseases do. And they can't take one more hit. They've got too much else going on right now in hibernation. They're defenseless because they're asleep. If you find a bat during the winter, call it in, immediately. Cause we really want to know about it. We really want to collect those bats if you find a dead one.
You are the only person I know on the whole planet who will have a dead bat in their car and be happy about it. Yeah, just say I love you for that. As bizarre as that sounds, right?
Yeah, exactly. My husband knows which bags in the freezer are mine. No touchy.
The third location this summer was my personal favorite, just outside of Woodshead. Mm-hmm. That was a fantastic night.
Yep.
If I'm not mistaken, I counted 38 bats and you counted a whopping 176. Yep. Does that ring a bell?
Yeah, at the time that was the most exciting one, eh? Like,
oh yeah.
So many mosquitoes. Remember stepping out of the car and being like, oh, this is where all the mosquitoes are this year.
Yeah.
Because there was none in Smithers. Yeah. But you just went, like, what was it, 5 minutes outside of Whitsett? And it was just like,
and we were suddenly so popular with the mosquito population. And we're like, oh God, where are the bats?
We might need bug spray tonight. Because we were doing pretty good up until that. Beautiful barn, beautiful farm outside of Whitsett. You were counting the, like, kind of the trees.
There was a bat house. And they kept coming from behind.
Yeah.
And the owner of the property said, there's some out in the trees.
Yeah.
And they kept coming in from behind. Yeah. And I thought, is this swinging around? No, this is a fresh bat. I'm sure this is a fresh bat.
It was a perfect location for bats, really. So, like, with the mosquitoes alone, but you have lots of forest on the outside with these big fields. There is a creek running down the prop, like the side of the house. Like, it was just kind of like a bat's paradise.
Yeah.
So we were just like, we were giggling. I remember my face was hurting because I was like, oh my gosh. Like, I couldn't keep up with them. It was very, very exciting. I mean, he had two bat boxes, one north, one south. Like, he had one on the side, and then they were also totally using the attic and the siding. And he was so lovely to deal with because he was so pro bats. He was just like, yep, I love it. He usually does the count himself. He had some eye surgery recently, so he had us come out and do it for him, which was awesome. I was so happy that we got out to go do that because, that was definitely a highlight of the summer for me because, we were just giggling.
Yeah. Do you remember, though, there were other species out there? Like, I sensed that this was a haven for all creatures.
Mm-hmm.
There were a couple of hummingbirds that just wouldn't leave the hummingbird feeders alone. And they kept dive bombing the feeders. And like, what is that noise?
Yeah.
You know? And then there was the dog that was following us around, which was so lovely. Remember that? Like, it was just
Bernie
such
Mountain
a
dog.
Wonderful experience all around.
It really was. And he had those horses.
Yeah.
I like, kept scaring the crap out of them. As it got dark, I heard like rustling in the bushes, and I was like keeping my eyes glued on the roost, being like, I hope a bear's not coming up behind me right now. But then it ended up just being his horse just kept running around because he's feeling playful. I want to collect guano from there next year if we can, because I don't think we have the species that was there, and I'd like to know what, because maybe he has several bat species, I don't know.
Oh, interesting. Because I somehow thought it was just the little brown myotis that we had around here, but no
we've
more
got
than
lots
me.
When we get to the place in town that I went without you, she's got a long-legged myotis, which is one of the bigger ones around, and I was like, I looked at the sheet and I was like, really, is it like, because little brown is definitely our most popular one, like most common one here, but we do have other species, and long-legged myotis is another one, and you could tell, like, next year when you come with me, they're bigger bats, like, you can tell that they're bigger. I was like, and that's why I ended up checking the species, because I was like, these seem a little large, and it was, long-legged myotis. Anyway,
how cool is that?
It was so cool.
How cool is that?
And we counted so many bats at that place.
I mean, that makes it exciting, right? When you count 13 bats, it's like, okay, well, I counted bats. Yeah. Woohoo. But when you count 176, it's like, oh my God, the jackpot.
Exactly. How many did we? I can't remember.
Those are the moments where, okay, is it done? Are we still counting?
You know, how long are you looking at? Yeah, totally. Because usually you end a back count about an hour after the first back comes out, because they're usually done within that. But I always, I want to stick around and see if it, and especially if you can still hear them, because that, I have a video of that, and it was just squeak, 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 squeak. Like, they're squeaking away in there, and I was like, I was so excited for when they came out, because you just know it's going to be a ton. And those are just bat boxes. That was the most I'd seen come out of a bat box, because they were, each had two bat boxes side by side, and they mostly came out of one of them, which was the original bat box you had up. And yeah, I think it was like over 200. It was wild.
I love that when something like that is reinforced, where somebody tells you this design capacity is, 300 bats, and you think, really? Yeah, and then you see the 300 bats, and you think, really?
Yeah, exactly.
Totally.
Crazy. Yeah. Wild. It was so fun. The whole time I was there, I was like, I feel so bad that Christine's missing this one, because we both thought it was going to be like kind of quiet, because it was like in town
the year before
properly. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, the year before I did a solo count there, and it was small but healthy.
Yeah,
in the teens, I think like 17, something like that.
Yeah.
And the thing I remember at that location was that she discovered a few tiny bat corpses under the bat box, which you'd alluded to.
Yeah.
Did you ever hear if they learned anything about that?
No. So they have to have them pretty fresh. It's tough up in the north to get things down to, like, the guys who do the necropsies are down in Nanaimo. So if we can't overnight things very efficiently here, it's really hard to get things down there and stay cold enough. So I actually have a couple that I need to send off still. But with her bats, they've been in the freezer too long. You have to essentially wrap them in paper towel, then put them in a freezer bag, because that's a good way that they don't feel like kind of freezer burnt. Like, unfortunately, like, the freezer will kind of break down some stuff, and they won't be able to tell what killed the bat. So if you wrap them in paper towel first, that can help. If you find a bat and you want to store it for me, make sure it's wrapped in paper towel and then put in the freezer. And don't touch it with your hands.
Yeah. But we can learn a lot from the bat corpses.
Yeah, we can. Exactly. And especially want to know about those ones found in the winter, so that we can swab them for white nose syndrome.
Yeah.
And the ones that I'll send will automatically be swabbed as well. So we can just keep tabs on that. Exactly. Because we want to know about anything that's going to, like, we don't want one more thing. So we want to know what it is, so that we can help them any way we can.
Yeah.
Doctor, my eyes have seen the years and the slow parade of fears without crying. Now I want to understand. I have done all that I could to see the evil and the good without hiding. You must help me if you can. Doctor, my eyes.
Hey, Smithers, this is Carly Quinn. I'm the BC Bat Project Coordinator for the Skeena region. BC has 15 species of bats, at least 10 of which are found in the Skeena region. Bats migrate to the Skeena region and fly south to hibernate every year. Hibernation sites require constant humidity of nearly 100%. Learn more about bats at bcbats.ca.
If top quality, locally sourced food is important to you, then Smithers is the place to be. In our town, there are many options for finding healthy, local food. Looking for a coffee shop? How about Bugwood Coffee, where friends gather for locally roasted coffee and baked goods at 1206 Main Street? Or Mountain Eagle Books, a used bookstore and cappuccino bar. Mountain Eagle on 3rd Avenue is a great place to lose yourself in a book and a coffee. Want to make it yourself? Visit Nature's Pantry on 1st Avenue, a health food store with an excellent selection of natural foods. And no town is complete without a farmer's market. The BV Farmer's Market offers fresh local produce and meats, craft beers and baked goods, artisan and craft wares, all made, baked, or grown locally. While the market is now closed for the winter, many of the vendors and farmers continue to offer products and services around town. Thank you to our sponsors, Bugwood Coffee, Mountain Eagle Books, Nature's Pantry, and the BV Farmer's Market. Food for body and soul, just like the cookie jar.
I mean, if there's a listener-supported radio station, that means that people can get
daily, every day, a different way of looking at the world. Not just what the corporate media want you to see, but a different picture, different understanding, but a different picture, a different understanding. Not only can you hear it, but you can participate in it. You can add your own thoughts, you know, and you can learn something and so on. Well, that's the way, people become human, you know. That's the way you become human participants in a social and political system.
You've got your hand in the cookie jar on CICK 93.9 FM in Smithers, BC. And as my little nanny used to say, sit you down and I'll feed you. I'm your host, Christine Bruce. Before the break, Carly Quinn and I were swapping bat trivia. Up next, more bat trivia. Because the more you know, the more it contributes to the health of our local bat population, which relies heavily on people doing our part.
Hey Smithers, this is Carly Quinn. I'm the BC Bat Project Coordinator for the Skeena region. During the bat pupping season, pregnant females roost together to maintain thermal requirements. Maternity colonies in larger structures can hold hundreds to thousands of individuals in one roost. Learn more about bats at bcbats.ca.
But the fact that you went there and found so many bats this year is a really good sign.
I was stoked.
Yeah.
Stoked. Like, it was... Yeah, it was very thrilling. And again, having citizens like her, who's also like, she was the one very excited about the guano. Like, she is like, yep, I collect this and I just throw it in the garden. And she's so comfortable with it. And you can tell she's not worried about it. And I was telling her about, you know, the possibility of it getting too hot, because she said that her bats took off early this year. And I said it could have been the heat, but we don't know. And then she was like, I'm going to see if my neighbor, I can talk my neighbor into putting a bat box on his side of the house so it's facing the other way. And I was like, if you could talk him into that, that'd be great. And I love that. Like, that's what we need. We needed to spread exactly like that. You have one person who cares about bats. They talk to their neighbor and they tell them why it's important. And then the neighbor gets on board and just goes on and on, right? And the more we can debunk that they're evil and they're going to get you and give you diseases, like, the better off bats are going to be, because we need them.
And the better off we're all going to be.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And nothing's malicious. Like, they don't want to give you diseases. Like, it's just, yeah, they're just trying to live like everything else. Like, we're all just trying to survive, and surely we can find a way to do that together.
I think the other thing that people need to realize is that every creature that's on the earth has a role to play as part of the bigger community.
Yeah.
And we need to enable them to do that role, because otherwise we all suffer.
Exactly. We shouldn't take anything for granted, because everything's a part of a really delicate system, really. And humans are really good at pushing that system, but we should get better at knowing what the system entails so that we can support the system.
I love that I live in Smithers and there are so many people into research that we're collecting data all the time. This is a huge hub of research in Smithers, and you know, if you live here, get involved with that, plug into that, because you learn so much and it's exciting and you become passionate about other life forms, and it's just a better way to get up in the morning.
I think being the Skeena Regional Coordinator for the BC Bat Program is probably the easiest one as far as convincing people, because you're right, we do have a lot. Like, I did an interview with the newspaper in Kitimat recently, and they were asking, like, so do you get a lot of pushback? Like, do people really, like, I need these bats out of here? And I was like, actually, no. Like, I get, like, most of the calls I get is, hi, I have a bat colony in my attic. I want to support it any way we can. So please help us do so. Like, there's always this caveat of, we don't want the bats living in our attic, but we really want to support bats. And so, like, that's half my job done. I don't have to convince someone that they need to care, because they're coming to me saying, we really care. And so then we can begin to work together immediately. So, like, we are really lucky in the North, because I like the way the newspaper, the journalist said it. He was like, well, yeah, up there, I feel like there's lots of outdoorsy people. And I'm like, yeah, I guess you do have to be pretty outdoorsy to want to live up here. So for people who have chosen to come all this way, yeah, they're an easy sell. Very easy sell. Because they know. They already know. And it makes my job way easier.
I love that. It just makes me happy that we're enabling you to do your job, you know?
Yeah, it's awesome. Thank you.
So, next trivia question. How big are bat babies at birth?
They're tiny, very tiny. They're absolutely small. They're only 30% of their mother's weight at birth. And they weigh...
But that's big for the mom, right? Like, she's carrying this thing that weighs a third of what she weighs.
Exactly.
So that must be hellish to drag that thing around just when, you know, you're at term. Know, women always say, oh my god, I need this thing to come out. Can you imagine trying to feed yourself in flight while this thing's being dragged around?
A third.
A bowling ball.
Exactly. And that's, yeah, and they're...
But they are tiny.
They're tiny.
If you think how tiny the brown miotis is, and then they've got this thing that's a 30% of their weight, like, that's...
Yeah, exactly.
What's that, like a quarter size? You
exactly.
Know?
They're tiny, but in proportion to mom, it's like, whoa, mom just puts so much energy into building you, which is why they need things like maternity colonies.
It's a miracle all that just they survive.
Exactly. They're on the verge. And that's the one thing about the natural world that I think we really take for granted, is that pretty much is everything's just on the balance of almost dying constantly. So giving them all the tools they can to survive is so crucial, because they're teetering. They're always teetering. And especially those females. A third of the body size of the mom. So, yeah, exactly.
Whew. So put up a bat house.
Exactly.
Like, really.
Give them a safe spot. Exactly.
Yeah.
Give them a home to raise their tiny yet significant babies. Like, very significant to them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then maybe make yourself a little superhero cape.
Yeah, exactly. You know? And a big pat on the back.
Totally.
Totally. Yeah.
Let's assume that someone listening has developed an affinity for bats over the course of our conversation. Let's just assume that we've done a good job.
I'm hoping so.
Hope springs eternal, right? Give us a few small improvements a person can make as a bat ambassador in their community. What can you do to enable bats in Smithers or in Telqua or around Round Lake or in Witsat or...
Yeah, so I think we've touched on it a lot already. So what you want to do is make sure that you're enhancing bat habitat any way you can. So leaving wetlands, encouraging wetlands, encouraging, big tree growth around those wetlands is going to be massive. If you have any say in how a forest is managed on either your property or your neighbor's property.
On the perimeter trail.
Exactly. Encourage wildlife trees. Encourage big old growth trees so that they can become wildlife trees. You want to enhance bat habitat any way you can.
Here's something that you said right at the beginning. They don't like lights. So turn off your lights at night. One of the things that Ken and Teresa White and I were commenting on last year when we were doing the owl survey was that we drove back into Smithers and there's all this light.
Exactly.
Come on, Smithers, turn the lights out at night.
Not to mention that makes it easier for the cats to find the bats as well, right? Yeah. So that's an easy one to do. If you got floodlights on just into the night, why? Yeah.
Put them on a timer.
Exactly. Have them on a sensor, you know, like just have them off as often as you can. Like maybe you need them on for safety, for access and stuff. Put up a sensor because that's like, then you're doing a lot of animals, not just bats, the favor and your neighbors. And some neighbors don't want to see it. They want to see the northern lights and you're stopping them seeing the night sky sometimes. So yeah, turn off those exterior lights in the middle of the night when you don't need them. Yeah, reduce disturbances wherever you can. So yeah, if you don't have to cut down the tree, don't cut down the tree. If you don't need to go into that attic during the pupping months, don't. Like, you really want to leave bats undisturbed if you can. Put up a bat box. No guarantee that bats will use it, but maybe one day. And giving them an option, like, even if it looks like they're not being used, sometimes a single male roosting bat will come use it for the day. And that's, you're definitely helping, even if it's a little bit. So maybe you don't get, 400 bats staying in there, but if you get a couple, that's a huge win. Because then they're safe from, owls and cats, and they're warm for the night. So yeah, giving them a little roof over their head is really nice.
Yeah, and important. You've done some significant work then.
Mm-hmm.
So here's a final trivia question that I don't actually have the answer for. Is there a special treat that bats like? I mean, we put out bird feeders in winter, and everyone knows that bats love mosquitoes in summer, but is there some little chewy that you might put out to entice and encourage bats into your yard?
Water features of any kind will support insects, right? You want, like, things that are going to come and feed at the water, like insects congregate around water. So having water can promote bats for sure. So like for us, we have a sewage lagoon behind our house. And cutting down the brush around it can help bats kind of go over the water and feed on top of the water if they want. So if you have any kind of watered surface that you can maintain access to, that can help bats and some of their favorite snacks are over there.
Something that I've put up in my yard and I never thought about it was, and I did it for other reasons, I put up a little bird bath.
Yeah.
It doesn't have a lot of water in it, but it has enough that insects can go in and have water and then climb out. It's not so deep that they drown.
Totally.
But I also have a kid's pool. Because my dog really needs to be bathed occasionally, and he doesn't want to get in it, but he'll go over and drink water out of it, and the cat will drink water. I sometimes find birds over there. Mm-hmm. Suddenly I'm thinking, wow, this thing probably did have significant attraction
especially in a drought, right, like this year. Like it was so dry this year, so like lots of wetlands probably would have been drying up, and so adding anything that can support the insects right now can... which sounds counterintuitive when you're trying to support bats so they can take your insects away. But there's lots of aquatic insects that support bats besides mosquitoes that you can promote.
What a good idea. wow, I never thought of that. Thanks, Carly. Oh, you're very clever.
No worries. I also have a kitty pond for my dog. I have the same issue. Those are down in the kitty pool.
Yeah, every time I bring the pool out, the dog goes the other way. I know what you're thinking. As a grandmother, I want to encourage my teeny weenies to be helpers. Would you call bats a helper species?
Absolutely. They're cute. Tell them they're cute. And they're cute. I got these little felted bats from the baby store yesterday from...
Mountains and Meadows.
Yeah, Mountains and Meadows. Yeah,
great little story.
Adorable. And they had these little felted ghosts and stuff for Halloween, but they also had these bats. And I was like, I'm buying you these bats. And they're adorable. And I'm like, that's a great way to sell your children on things. Like, look at these cute things that need your help. People want to help. If you just say they're cute, people will think they're cute. Just like if you say they're evil, people will think they're evil, right? You can reverse that story. They are fuzzy, tiny, and they squeak in the cutest way, you
yes,
know.
Yes, they do.
Listening to those little babies squeak, 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 squeak. You're like, oh my gosh, they must be adorable. And they are. And their whole face is an ear, right?
Yeah.
So like they're collecting.
That moves around,
yeah,
listening.
Exactly. They're collecting sound to their face. And it's really, really cool. So yeah, bats are definitely a helper species. They help the world go around, essentially. They keep like insect numbers where they should be without our help. And they are just so good. And they're poo. They have magic poo, right?
Magic
poo. If you're a gardener or a farmer or like any kind of person who likes to grow things, they got magic poo, and you should support bats for that reason.
Okay, bats are a helper species, but I just want to point out that Carly Quinn is a helper species too. We need more of both.
Thank you.
Thank you, Carly, for coming to the cookie jar, because what fun was this?
It was
right?
So fun. Thank you so much. I love your enthusiasm for bats, and it's infectious. Like, I love that we come at it together, and we both love bats,
yeah.
And we just kind of build each other up on it, and yeah, let's just go put that into the world as much as we can. And you're doing that by bringing me on your show. It's so nice. And it's been an absolute pleasure to just sit and talk about bats and how much we love them. It was so good.
Yeah, what fun. I could do this forever.
Oh, ditto.
Let's do it again.
Yeah, let's do it again.
Let's go do bat counts again next time.
Exactly.
And if you want to do bat counts,
yeah,
contact Carly at...
Yeah, skeenabats@gmail.com. Let's get as many people out there as we can. And
counting bats.
Yeah, and if you have a bat colony that you want to start counting, let me know. I can send you all the information it takes to count bats, and you can just use a counter on your phone, and you send us the information, and it all gets logged, and it all gets used for bat conservation purposes. So, yeah, thank you so much for having me, Christine.
Thank you for being here. Woohoo! Bats!
Bats!
Before the cavern of night, darkness alive with possibility. Nose to this wind full of twinkling lights, trying to catch the scent of what's coming to be in this world of wonders. Thank you. Somewhere a saxophone slides through changes like a wet pipe dripping down my neck. Gives me a chill, sounds like danger, but I can't stop moving till I cross this sector of this world of wonders. World of wonders. World of wonders. World of wonders. There's a rainbow shining in a bead of spittle, falling diamonds in a rattling rain, light flexed on moving muscle. I stand here dazzled with my heart in flames at this world of wonders. World of wonders. World of wonders.
On Monday, October 30th, the Smithers Brewing Company hosted an International Bat Week trivia night where Pam Hawson, Carly Quinn, and I tested your bat knowledge over a beer. Since I've got some time in this episode, I'm going to read some of those questions here, and I'll give you a few seconds to come up with an answer. You can test your own bat knowledge right now. As Carly commented that night, get ready to spread your wings of knowledge and dive into the fascinating world of bats. So here are a few questions from Round 1, Bat Basics. Question 1. How many species of bats are there worldwide? What do you think? Is it 300, 800, 1400, or 2000? It's 1400. Question 2. What is the only continent where bats are not found naturally? Is it Antarctica, North America, Africa, or Europe? The only continent is Antarctica. Question 3. What are bat young called? Are they called cubs, winglings, kits, or pups? Bat young are called pups. Question 4. Why do bats hang upside down? Bats need to drop into flight. Did you know that bats can't stand on their feet? Their feet are set too far back in their bodies and are part of their wing apparatus, so they can't balance on them. As you'll hear later, their feet are used for an entirely different purpose. And a bonus pun. What do you call a bat that's afraid of the dark? A scaredy bat. Of course. Okay, on to round two. Bats in pop culture. Question one. Who played the role of Batman in the 2008 film The Dark Knight? It was Christian Bale. Question two. What is the name of Rasputin's bat sidekick in the 1997 film Anastasia? Bartok. In baseball, what is Jose Bautista's nickname? It's Joey Bats. Question four. In the animated series Batman, the animated series, what's the name of Batman's sidekick? Is it Robin, Nightwing, Batgirl, or Alfred? Well, it's Robin. Question five. The movie Goodfellas begins with a car driving at night. Henry Hill, Jimmy Conway, and Tommy DeVito hear a bumping sound from the car. They pull over and open the trunk. Who's in the trunk? It's Billy Bats. Question 5. What movie does the character Batty appear in, voiced by Robin Williams? It's Fern Gully, The Last Rainforest. Question 6. What mockumentary TV series follows the lives of three vampires living together in New York City? The mockumentary is What We Do in the Shadows. And a bonus pun. What do you call a bat who likes to be alone? Well, you call him a bachelor, of course. Now, on to round 3, bat conservation. For question 1, we wanted you to name one major threat to bat populations worldwide and suggest a solution to mitigate it. I'm just going to give you a few. White nose syndrome. We should promote cleaning of shoes and footwear whenever you enter a bat habitat. Predation. We encourage responsible cat ownership. Habitat loss. Talk to your MP about protecting bat habitat. All right, question 2. Of the 15 species of bats in BC, how many are listed federally or provincially? The answer is 8. Question 3. In North America, which bat species is particularly at risk due to the devastating effects of white nose syndrome? And that would be the little brown bat, or Myotis. All right, round 4, bat mashup. Are bats blind? No, they're not. Question 2. What fruit would cease to exist without bats? Bananas, avocados, mangoes, or all of the above? Well, of course it's all of the above. Bats are pollinator species. Question 3. How fast can bat species fly? 5 miles per hour, 20 miles per hour, or 40 miles per hour? And we had someone comment that in some countries they don't travel miles per hour, but they can travel all of these speeds. Question 4. Which liquor exists with the help of bat pollination? Gin, tequila, rum, or wine? And that would be tequila. Question 5. In what year was International Bat Week first celebrated? Was it 1997, 2002, 2009, or 2015? And it was 2015. Question 6. True or false? Bats are the only mammals capable of sustained flight. It's true. Flying squirrels actually just glide. Now I'm going to leave up round 5 here because it was pretty unpopular at the event. Although I will relive one moment of glory where I was one of 3 people in the room who recognized the song Paradise by the Dashboard Light by Meatloaf off his hugely popular Bat Out of Hell album. And all the kids at school, they were wishing they were me that night. And now I'm on so close and tight. And now I'm so good, and now I'm so right. And we're blowing like the man on the edge of the night. Blowing like the man on the edge of the night. Come on, hold on tight. Well, come on, hold on tight. Oh, it's falling down in the deep of night. I can see paradise by the dashboard light. Ain't no doubt about it, we were doubly blessed. But I will include one final question from the event, and one that felt like a big learning moment for most people in the room. If you've been paying attention to these 2 episodes of Bats or the Bomb, you'll know the answer, because I did ask Carly how this is managed. How do bats manage to get insects into their mouths during flight? Do they scoop them in? Do they rely on the wind and speed to collect them with an open mouth in flight? Or do they use their feet? Well, it's their feet. Bats grab hold of insects with their feet and they swing the insect into their mouth. Bats are so cool.
Never felt so clearly as when I'm floating in Lake Erie. Closest I've been to flying is the furthest I'm away from dying. I'll wash up on the shore, let the waves crash over me. Back pocket of my jeans, got my thumb out on the road but trying not to be seen. Scramble on the beach, already half in the bag, and the big red sun's already starting to sag. I've never felt so clearly as when I'm floating in Lake Erie. Closest I've been to flying is the furthest I'm away from dying. I'll wash up on the shore, let the waves crash over me. Pocket for a cigarette, I'm way too young to have a habit yet. And the stars pick me up and drag me into the sky. Forgot where I was going, but my blood is still flowing. And I've never felt so clearly as when I'm floating in Lake Erie. Closest I've been to flying is the furthest I'm away from dying. I'll wash up on the shore, let the waves crash over me. Smell of tobacco bonds flowing in. The water's just waiting for the touch of my skin to baptize my youth before I leave on a whim. The night is old and those awake are feeling bold, and nobody's afraid of the bite of the cold. So let the water cloak you like the blanket of God, and the great lake embrace you as you fall into its charm. Never felt so clearly as when I'm floating in Lake Erie. Closest I've been to flying is the furthest I'm away from dying. I'll wash up on the shore, let the waves crash over. Never felt so clearly as when I'm floating in Lake Erie. Closest I've been to flying is the furthest I'm away from dying. I'll wash up on the shore, let the waves crash over. Wash up on the shore, let the waves crash over me.
Thanks for joining me today. You've been listening to part two of Bats Are the Bomb with Carly Quinn. The Cookie Jar is produced by Christine Bruce, with music by Elijah Larson, aired through CICK 93.9 FM in Smithers, BC. Available anytime at smithersradio.com or anywhere you get your podcasts. Tune in next week for another two-part episode with Dr. David Connell on this summer's BC Farmers Market Surveys. Love farmers markets? Love fresh fruit? You can thank bats for ensuring that we can get local fruit, because bats are a pollinator species. You know, it's all connected. For more on bats in BC, or to register for training as a bat ambassador, like me, check out bcbats.ca. And if you want to know what's happening with us each week, find us on Facebook at The Cookie Jar on CICK.